The Meaning of Geranium from The Secret Language of Plants by Andrina, read by Sam Gabriel, based on the works of J.K. Rowling. Chapter 5. The Maid, the Mother, and the Young Crone. When they heard that, when they heard the news that she... Ron turned white and dropped to the floor and stayed there fighting a fainting spell. He couldn't even cry because he couldn't breathe. The world became blurry and colorless, and he would never know if he had fainted or not. He wouldn't remember those hours very well. Neville demonstrated an admirable courage that day. He was the only one standing, the only one composed enough to give some aid to the most distraught students, to hug them and give them water and cast a calming spell here and there. Not a cheering charm, though, because they never worked quite well in these situations. He knew that. When he changed clothes that night, his robes were wrinkled and soaked in tears and snot. He had become a man that day, an adult. The scared, clumsy boy turned into the one offering comfort. The news left Hogwarts. Minerva McGonagall was shocked when the letter to Granger's parents, that had taken her all evening to compose, was returned that same night. She realized then that Hermione had known and had prepared. She cried that night like she hadn't cried since the death of that other brilliant student of hers, Lily Evans. Ernie McMillan had been careful and discreet, but he still didn't manage to stay beneath suspicion. Ginny had misgivings. Ginny asked Pansy Parkinson, who, as a Slytherin, should know how to get someone to confess their most hidden shames. They set a trap for Ernie, and 3 days later he fell right into it. He said that they had threatened him and his family, and it's not like he was giving up Harry Potter. Surely they understood, didn't they? Ginny and Pansy, both of their families in the Sacred 28, they must understand that one always put family first. Pansy's parents had severed ties with her. Pansy had to spend summer with a lush old spinster aunt, the only relative that didn't disavow her. Ginevra Weasley came scarily close to becoming a murderer that day. She jinxed Ernie 3 times, and then attempted to kill him with her own bare hands. Not that it did any good. Hermione had been taken. The news left Hogwarts and made its way to London and Diagon Alley. There was shock. Most were sorry. Some thought that she had brought it all on herself, being muggle-born and loud and a tad insolent. What with her pushing for species equality and participating in the riots at Hogwarts. When Fred heard, he was sad, of course, and worried, and immediately thought that they should create something wonderful and name it after her. But George went to the bathroom to be sick, and stayed there on his knees, crying, and could not eat a thing for a day and a half. They were 2 courses apart, but he was only a year older than her, and he had never done or said anything because he knew she was Ron's insofar as she could be considered anyone's, but that didn't change how he felt. Molly Weasley cried in her kitchen and cursed herself for that year she believed the writings of Rita Skeeter and sent Hermione a miserable gift. She had been good this summer, hadn't she? When Hermione was with them and during Christmas, but that seemed so weak and hollow at the moment. And eventually the news slowly rolled to the continent and then to the east of the continent, and Victor Crumb gave an interview in the Glashatti, condemning Voldemort, the first European celebrity to do so. Because Crumb spoke, the news appeared in the Prophet. Grim Old Place hadn't been so quiet since the knight had arrived there. Meanwhile, Hermione was still alive. She was also right. So horribly right. She wished she were wrong more often. They had come for her first, muggle-born mudblood, and yet better at magic than any of them, they had come. And thanks to all the gods and souls in Purgatory that she spared her parents this. She only had herself to thank for it, but still she was so, so grateful that they would never know. That no one would have to go and tell them that they couldn't even retrieve her body to bury. Or worse yet, that they did. And then they would see her dead and bruised and mutilated. It was a small thing, but it liberated a big part of her heart and her mind. It took that sorrow for her parents and left only the pain. The thing about Cruciatus... What makes it unforgivable is that it lingers. There are many other curses and spells that cause pain. Umbridge had used them. But the Cruciatus stays with you once the wand is lifted. It is a pain that goes beyond the blood and the flesh to the sinews and bones. a pain that buries itself there and sinks its claws and doesn't let go, so that you always know, you always remember. Hermione understood how someone could go mad with it even long after the curse stopped. She understood the fear it brought, the feeling that you would do anything, betray anyone, just for the promise that it would stop, and more than that, for the promise that it would not happen again. She understood Ernie, even if she could not forgive him. Bellatrix had learned restraint, which wasn't a very good thing because it meant she was being slow and careful to draw things out. After the first Cruciatus, Hermione had insulted and taunted her, hoping that it would make her so mad that she would kill her that instant, but she had seen right through it, and promised that they would spend quite a lot of time together. She had smiled and kissed her cheek as she carved the word mudblood into Hermione's left arm. Hermione lost her sense of time. Eventually someone dragged her down to a dungeon. Bellatrix had learned restraint, but she was too mad to control herself with Hermione in the room. The cell was cold. The stone floor was a relief to Hermione's feverish flesh. Bellatrix had undressed her soon after she started to torture her. She wanted to see. She took Hermione's clothes with her own hands, slashing at them both with her wand and a knife. And the clothes. Here is the thing with clothes. You are born with a body, and as soon as you can stand up, you are taught that that body is shameful and no one should see it. This lesson is repeated so much that later in life, when you are an adult, you hide from your own body even when you are alone. To be naked is shame, and shame is an emotion that takes over everything. Shame paralyzes. Shame is so big and so horrible that when you experience it, your mind and soul can't feel anything else. They can't think of anything else other than the wish not to be ashamed. When you are naked, all you want is to be dressed again and to escape the shame. Pansy had read a lot about this topic, said that to be scared of your nakedness was a chain. Clothes. Here is the other thing with clothes. They are human. Only humans feel that shame, that need to hide under dress. To take someone's clothes is to take their humanity. Animals are naked, slaves are naked. House elves are covered with rags, but never with proper garments. Hermione had been undressed down to her underwear. That was the other thing, of course. When you are a woman and you are in danger, there is always that extra threat. Hermione thought that Bellatrix let her keep her panties just so she could scare her even more with the possibility that eventually she would take that too. To be honest, at this point, she didn't even care about that. There was just no space in her mind left. Narcissa was the youngest of the three sisters, and it seemed that by the time she was born, there was no courage or strength left for her. She was not like Andromeda, and certainly not like Bella. She had received the best education, doubly so after Andromeda's scandal. Narcissa had learned about house honor and family loyalty, and she had married the man her parents had indicated, and counted herself lucky. Lucius Malfoy was more good-looking and richer than Rodolphus, and together they made a lovely couple. Narcissa was something more than a witch. She was a lady of society, so her education had gone well beyond Hogwarts. She had learned to play the piano, and she had learned languages. This was most beneficial and probably the decisive factor why Lucius married her rather than not sister, or one of the Greengrass girls. It was a tradition that the lady of the house in Malfoy Manor spoke a language other than English. It gave a certain charm to the household, and the children grew up bilingual. You never know when you will need to speak another language. Narcissa spoke German and French, and rather liked the first. She felt strong speaking German, and she liked the feeling in her brain as she figured out the declination. You also had conjugation and agreement in French, but it was not quite the same. When she came to the house to meet Lucius's parents, they looked at her favorably and asked her to say something in either language. Lucius had vetoed German immediately. He said he didn't like how her mouth looked as she spoke it, and that she didn't make it sound right, although it wasn't clear what he meant by that. So he chose French, and Narcissa spoke French from that moment on, and that was the language D learned. She was not allowed to speak his name. Narcissa knew she was weak. She had nothing. Sometimes she cursed herself because she was not able to protect her son. Sometimes she cursed herself because surely her weakness was what corrupted him. Perhaps if she had been allowed to teach him German, perhaps then Draco would have been the son his father wanted, harder and stronger and cruel. The Muggle girl, she was strong. Not that it mattered, because Bellatrix was stronger, and the girl would end up dead. Narcissa did not feel sorry for the mudblood. She did not. Bellatrix was stepping back now, panting and with a dazed and satisfied expression. She almost looked drunk. Narcissa was weak. If she was strong, she would perhaps order that a house elf poison the girl and spare her the misery. But no, she shouldn't, she wouldn't. She said nothing as she saw them take her away. Hermione started to feel cold. She had thought that it would make her numb, but the pain had barely lessened. Hers wouldn't be an easy death. She closed her eyes and took a few deep breaths, but it didn't help. Just as the cold didn't help. Nothing helped, and she was cold and hungry and scared and in so much pain. Maybe she was crying, she couldn't say. She just wanted it to end already, to die and stop hurting. If there ever was a time for wandless nonverbal magic, this was it. And then she opened her eyes and sat up and slapped herself in the cheek 3 times. Stupid, 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 Hermione, giving up so easily. Stupid. Wake up already and start to make sense. Hadn't she been the first student to master the nonverbal spells in DADA class? Snape hadn't given her any points because we wouldn't want to offend the political leaders, as he put it, the bastard. But he had been impressed. She had seen it. Hadn't she been witness to Harry, hopeless with a wand but leaking music around him? Hadn't she performed wandless magic before Hogwarts and before knowing she was a witch even? She had mended her mother's shawl. She had. And when she was 8 in PE class and she had been so scared of the stupid vaulting horse exam, hadn't the horse suddenly broken a leg? It was the last week of classes just before summer and the teacher had had to grade them on something else. And here she was, stupid. Sitting and feeling sorry for herself instead of doing something about it. After Hermione got her letter of acceptance in September, she spent the year reading and preparing. That included learning as much as she could about magic wands, so she could choose sagely in the shop. Later it had seemed like a waste of time because the wands chose her, but knowledge is never a waste. Mark these words, knowledge is never a waste. A wand is just an instrument to channel the wizard's magic. It must have a magical core. Ollivander preferred phoenix feather, unicorn hair, and dragon heartstring, but it wasn't restricted to them. And a wood body, this is the ideal. Hermione got up slowly and examined her cell. She was hardly the first occupant. There was no wood, but there was goblin hair. And there was a bit of moss, which technically was part of the Plantae Kingdom, and so practically a piece of wood, given time and evolution. Hermione put the goblin hair in the moss and glued it all together with her blood. It was not a wand. It was more like a soft paste squeezed into something that vaguely resembled wand shape. If any of the Death Eaters upstairs saw it, they would laugh. It was not a wand. When she shook it, it caught on fire like a flare and burned the skin of Hermione's right hand. It burned into smoke and ashes and non-existence. Whoosh, it went as it disappeared. Click. But Hermione heard the door unlock. As much as she wanted to bolt out of there running, Hermione had to go slow. She was in too much pain to run, for one, and she had to be careful. Any time, at any moment, they could come for her. Any sound could alert them. She kept her left arm over her chest. He was still bleeding a little bit, but she would not leave traces of blood on the floor if she pressed it against her breast. Half naked and injured, barefoot and cold, she climbed the stairs up. Do you ever wonder how many times in your life you went through a test unaware of it? How many times you were close to disaster, to choosing wrong without you knowing it? It is a staple of fairy tales. As the hero escapes the castle of the monster, he comes across a choice. It can be a door, or a horse, or a statue. But if he chooses wrong, the monster will catch him. Hermione came to a landing at the end of the stairs. A narrow, dark corridor. To her left, the corridor ended soon after in a well-lit room covered by a thick carpet. Hermione could see the shadows moving, indicating there was a fire. Someone had left a sky-blue dressing gown draped over the corner of a divan. She couldn't see what was to the right of the corridor. It was too long and dark. All she had was a faint smell of food that hinted at the kitchens. Were Hermione to choose the room to the left, she would be able to cover her nakedness and warm her flesh at the fire, and even get a small drink from the liquor cabinet before dying a gruesome death, The room was obviously empty, but for the magical portraits that would give her up. But Hermione didn't go left. She would have liked to. The room was very enticing. However, Hermione was so very used to controlling herself and to get what was needed rather than what she wanted that she went right to the kitchen, rightly guessing that if the manor was like any other manor in the world, it would have a door outside through the kitchens, a door that more often than not was left open. She chose right, and she would never know how close she came to choosing wrong. Narcissa Malfoy did not have the strength to speak up. She could not face her demented sister, and she certainly didn't dare contradicting her dear husband, even when it was about disinheriting Draco, and the prohibition to ever say his name or ask after him ever again. She didn't know that there could be strength in silence. She had retired to the sitting room on the second floor. She found that she could not stand her sister's presence at the moment, and she wanted to be far away from the room where they had tortured the girl. Here the floorboards were a different color, and the wallpaper was soft blue with white flowers. Here she didn't see the blood stains over the dark polished wood of the floor, not unless she closed her eyes. She did not feel sorry for the Muggle-born girl, but she admired her strength. After a while, the floorboards here started to remind her of the ones in the ballroom. This was hardly the first time someone was tortured and murdered in the house. It was quite silly to react like this, and just another proof of Narcissa's pathetic and feeble nature. Perhaps it was because the girl seemed so young. She could not look at the floorboards, and the stupid flowers on the walls felt as if they were sapping all of Narcissa's strength. She looked through the window then, to the half-frozen ground. It was a cold night, and it had been a cold week. There had been a bit of snow 2 days ago, although it didn't last. If someone were to cross the garden to the tree line in the forest beyond, they would not leave footprints behind. Narcissa watched in a daze as the Muggle-born girl, hunched over and with both arms held close against her chest, made her way to the cover of the trees. She did not have the strength to speak up. And so she watched her go in silence. What power silence held. It was so cold. There was such pain in her chest, as if a jellyfish had taken residence in her heart, and its tentacles were dancing down her torso and up to her shoulders, stinging her flesh from the inside. Hermione had never been very athletic. Very smart people rarely are, because they spend more time in their brain than in their bodies, and it takes them close to 20 years to outgrow their clumsiness and learn how their bodies work. Other than the first year flying lessons, there was no other physical class in Hogwarts, and Hermione had been quite happy about that. It's not like they didn't get a workout climbing up and down the stairs from their tower to their classes in any case. It hurt. Her chest, her arms, her legs. As often happens when there is pain, the eye goes into hiding and retreats to the safety of the mind. This is a dangerous thing in very smart people. Their minds are so full that it is easy to lose the way in there. You go into hiding for too long, you may not make your way back. But for now, hiding in her own head let Hermione walk through the forest. It let her forget about the fever and the throbbing pain in the arm and the cramped and burning muscles. She got to a stream. The water smelled clean, and she was so thirsty. She remembered now being very thirsty. She hadn't noticed before, but Hermione suspected her education was lacking. Sure, she knew so much about charms and transfigurations and potions and was the best student in the school, and yet she had first started to suspect with Harry, when he did things that all books said couldn't be done, and when he got a subscription to that journal. Mostly, Harry wanted to track down the issues in which Lupin had written and reread his words, but there had been other articles, and Hermione had read a few of them. More since Harry left, because reading the words he had underlined was a way to be close to the friend she had lost. The articles were often ridiculously specific and specialized. They were often so theoretical as to become meaningless. Really, how much does it matter whether an old medieval witch meant to write pewter or tin? They're the same thing. But they also hinted at a whole universe of which Hermione knew nothing. Sometimes it seemed as if people looked down on history of magic, or at best allowed for only one version of it, one in which wizards were always great and muggles were dumb and witches didn't have much to say. And so they didn't know their own origins, and they didn't know where their magical knowledge fit in the history of the world. The waters of the stream were clean and inviting. Hermione vaguely remembered her childhood fairy tales, muggle tales, or perhaps wizarding tales that had fallen into the muggle world. They warned against eating and drinking in the lair of the enemy. Had they seen something like this in class? Had there been mention of old magic? There had been a chapter or two in Herbology about household plants that captured those that entered uninvited. They focused so much on what individual wizards did. They had no idea of what witches managed as a group. What bigger magic you could get when combining small and silent efforts. Just in case, Hermione didn't kneel to drink. This was the second trial Hermione passed today. She didn't drink, and she didn't fall asleep there. She crossed the stream carefully, making sure her feet didn't touch the water. At some point she found a long branch, and she picked it up to use as a cane. She thought then that her fingers ought to be blue. It was cold, and she had been outside for a while. Her fingers should be blue, and she shouldn't be able to move. She should be shivering. It was cold, and it was night, and Hermione was half-naked, bleeding from her left arm and with a long beech staff in her right hand. Was this like the old witches had moved? Before the Romans' arrival, were they too immune to the cold? Had they bled like her? Had they been scared like her? Hermione's escape was discovered late in the night, when Rabat and Lestrange went down to the dungeons. He knew Bellatrix didn't have her, and so at first he thought someone else had stolen the girl, like he intended to do, to play for a little bit with her. But no one had her, and Bella searched all of the bedrooms, swearing she would geld the man if she discovered someone had taken her prisoner, hers. They searched the house, and then they searched the gardens. Narcissa watched from a low window as robes were hastily thrown over shoulders and someone opened the broom shed. She had a mental tally of the hours gone, closer to 5 than to 6. In 5 hours, with a straight course and a sure foot, you could get to the other side of the forest and the Malfoy estate. But you would need 4 more hours before arriving to the next village where you could find help. There was Bella, and Rodolphus, and Rabastin, and both of the Averys. Lucius did not allow Rosier to spend the night in the house, and Dalahav had gone to the northern country to see if he could regain some of his lost prestige working there for their lord. It would be 5 against 1, 6 if Lucius went with them, although he didn't seem very inclined to. With a bit of luck, the girl would return to the house dead. Not that Narcissa wanted her to die, just it would be so much better for her. There were fewer trees and more patches of grass on the ground. She was coming near the end of the forest. Hermione thought she would cry, or perhaps she was crying already. She had made it to the other end of the forest, but when she looked up to the sky to look at the stars and orient herself, she saw a patch of darkness dash over them. It was the silhouette of someone riding a broom. Hermione was smart. Rather than running through open ground, she sought cover under the trees. She was brave. When one of the Lestranges flew just a few meters above her, she covered her mouth with her hand and she did not whimper. Not a sound made. They still found her. As insane as she was, Bellatrix was both powerful and intelligent. She cast Hominum Revelio 2 dozen times. Of course she found Hermione. Hermione was smart and brave and powerful. The beech staff she had used as a cane somehow served her to cast Protego against the sparkling red curse one of the Lestranges was throwing at her. She swung the staff against the next brother, too weakly to do much harm, but enough that he had to veer with his broom and almost crash into a tree. She ran. She stopped 2 more curses and deflected another. Didn't even know you could change the course of a spell until she saw those boys in Little Whinging. But she was still a 17-year-old girl, thirsty and hungry and weakened by pain. They were closing in, crowding. She could not stop the next jinx. Her whole body clamped, as in a seizure. She started to fall. Her body didn't get to touch the ground.
I got her!
End of chapter 5. For the full text of this and other stories by the same author, visit the AO3 page as well as the Tumblr of author Andrina. First pass editing by Ohana. Music by Sean Johnson. If you would like to commission me to record a story, voiceover, or character, please get in touch using the contact information on my website, which is located at samgabrielvo.com. And there you can find the stories that I've read, as well as links to my Patreon page, to which I hope you will consider subscribing to support me, and my Discord server, where I record things live for your enjoyment. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.